Field Labs.
Okay, take it away, Rob.
Thank you, John. So yes, who am I? Why do I deserve to be up here to talk to you? Well, ultimately, yeah. But probably don't, but thank you all for listening. So let me explain a little bit about Digital Catapult as an organization, and then go into elements of blockchain distributed ledger and explain why I find them absolutely fascinating and what we're trying to do to promote their uptake here in the UK and why we should care about that. So Digital Catapult is one of nine catapult organizations founded by the government about 7 years ago now. So other ones have fairly obvious names. You can tell what they do from the name. Offshore renewable energy, compound semiconductor catapult, medicines discovery catapult. Digital catapult's a little more difficult to describe. We exist as a vendor neutral organization between multiple parts of the economy, trying to mostly connect these parts that should be naturally talking to each other but don't for some reason, and also trying to encourage small business to grow and large business to find better ways of doing things. It's a bit of a hard mission, but we're getting there. And as I mentioned, digital could describe pretty much anything in our lives today, so we focus down into a few main strands that include future networks, so the Internet of Things or 5G, immersive technologies, which is your old VR, but nowadays being reborn. Lots more interest in that today. AI, which of course the government is putting a large amount of money into. And then my world, which is distributed ledgers. And because digital could be applied anywhere, we have to focus down on two main sectors. So we exclude financial services because the financial service industry doesn't really require government assistance or grant funding assistance. So instead, we try to help the manufacturing sectors and we try to help the creative sector. Note that we're not a grant awarding body, we are a grant receiving body, but we work in collaboration with others to help them find the right grants and to put some time and effort and thinking into the projects that are won. So back to this gentleman's point on the on the European funds, we're currently in three European funded blockchain projects. So one on journalism, in fact, two on journalism, one from Horizon, one from EIT Digital, and then another one on blockchain for social good across Europe, trying to create a network of accelerators. So you've all heard the technology, or you all know the technology. I just want to show you a little bit of insight into my thoughts. Not always the best place to go, but let's go there anyway. Why use distributed ledger technology? So let's imagine we're a million miles away. In a warm, sunny country, we've got villages surrounding a wonderful lake and it's full of fish. But sadly, over time, the fishermen are taking selfishly from that lake to the point where they've depleted their natural resource. And ultimately, there's a catastrophe in the economy, the local environment collapses. This is economics 101, tragedy of the commons situation. We have a common resource, we've failed to manage it, we've failed to exploit it collaboratively, and we all lose out as a result. So this is where data can actually improve the way that we do business. We would want to share data on how many fish are in that lake, how many people are in each village, how many fish do they need each day to feed the people in that village. We can imagine a data-rich environment where we have a much better managed common resource. But how would we do this as humans today? Well, each village would appoint a village leader, and the village leader would go sit on a council between the villages, and the council would pass decrees and say how many you're allowed to take at what time and so on. Is it an efficient system? No, it's not. We could imagine digitizing, automating elements of this, and we would want to have some common infrastructure to communicate that data with each other. Where does the trust come from in that infrastructure? Who is going to be the boss? Or is it possible for everyone to collaborate and equally be the boss of this common infrastructure? So that's where a distributed system comes in. That's where multi-stakeholder distributed ledgers come in. What is distributed ledger technology? I'm not going to delve deep into it. It is a ledger. It is distributed, and it is connected with this crazy thing we call the internet. You might have heard of it. So that when one person updates their version of the ledger, that's replicated across all other copies of the ledger identically. so that if a few people drop out of the network, everyone else can reconstruct. And you can also make sure that people aren't saying two different things to two different parties, a Byzantine fault. So key features of distributed ledgers is very high availability, synchronization of records, and security, well, for varying definitions of the word security against intrusion, and it's impossible to alter the history. Again, we can go into that in more detail if you want. So there's a few key pieces to the anatomy of a distributed ledger. I'll go into this in a little bit more depth later. So about a year ago, we started out at the Catapult saying, well, look, who's out there and what are they doing here in the UK? We wanted to get a snapshot of the market so that we could try to put in some programs and processes to help them all. And we came up with this report, which is available on our website. It's a year out of date now. We've just completed a refresh of who's out there. There have been some deaths in the market of all the ICO companies and the like, but there's still about 260, 270 players in the UK market. At the time, we interviewed about 10, 15% of the market to figure out what they were up to, where they were. You can see there's a very large focus in the southeast and London, but actually there were some few standouts up in Edinburgh, Northern Ireland, and around Manchester area, interestingly. We saw that the market segmented itself into four divisions. So at the very bottom, you've got the people building distributed ledgers. So these would be tech stacks, born de novo, or taken from someone else's version, so like an Ethereum, but then adding their own particular secret sauce to make it their own ledger. On the right-hand side, there are about 90 companies out there building applications that would live on these ledgers. At the top are the service providers. They've actually remained the healthiest part of this industry, so people providing specialist marketing, specialist banking, specialist advisory, devs for hire, and the like. And then on the left-hand side are your centralized applications, which is where you give away ownership of your property, you give away ownership of your digital assets to a central party that then holds and trades or deals them. So those are your cryptocurrency exchanges, those are your wallet internet wallet providers and the like. So around 270 in all. I'll skip these next two because those are out of date. So in the UK, we've got a lot of evidence of investment. You know, we're talking billions of pounds of investment. We've got a very large local talent pool and a desire in the UK to actually put some of this stuff into practice. But we've had little engagement in DLT outside the financial sector, and that remains true today. So whilst we all talk of supply chain, whilst we all talk of provenance of coffee or provenance of critical food infrastructure, being able to reward creators so that independent artists can find their voice and get rewarded per download, we haven't been able to remove any of those traditional middlemen with this technology yet. But it is only 10 years old. And I think there's a few things that we need to address to try to overcome these issues, and that is the business of blockchain. So those blockchain builders out there and those distributed application builders out there, it's a tough world. Blockchain is not like any other business out there. It's not like an AI. It's not like an IoT company. You cannot build a single B2B relationship and I sell you my product, your business improves, I get money off you, we both win. That is not blockchain. Blockchain is infrastructure. Blockchain is multi-party from the outset. And that is very difficult to do, particularly if you're a three-person startup. And blockchain also asks companies to do some very difficult things internally. So where the internet came along and improved the shared communications between companies so that data was a bit more freely available, blockchain distributed ledgers are asking you to do the next two layers of the corporate stack. They're asking you to find particular pieces of your business where it makes more sense to share that data with other partners and to align your processes with each other, yet still retain your identity as companies sitting on top of that. We're not saying that you should put all of your business on the blockchain. That doesn't make any sense. We're saying figure out between you and a group of others which pieces of the business you're doing make sense on a shared ledger. So we end up with a scenario like this where you've got the dreamers, the blockchain people, pushing this idea up a hill to the recipients who are still unclear of the benefits that they're going to see. And there are some public ones. Comgo was mentioned, VACT, WeTrade, some very large companies playing with these technologies, not yet reporting the financial uplift they've seen or the process improvement, but I'm sure they'll start to tell us soon. But they're there, they're being used, they're real. So we have a demand side problem. And what we're trying to do at Catapult is solve that demand side problem. We don't think that there's all that much value in building another blockchain accelerator. You know, lots of fintech places have internal blockchain accelerators. Lots of universities have got students working with this technology, thinking about spinning out and the like. But they're all going into a market where no one is buying, because no one knows what they're buying, no one knows how to buy it, no one knows how to do it. There's a number of reasons for that. So this is where we as educators, or we as a community here of largely academics, can try to help. Technical complexity. So how many of you have heard of all three of these? Hands up if you've heard of all three. Okay, so there we go. How many of you know what the one on the right is? Okay, the rest of you, do you know that's a £1 billion company? It's a £1 billion blockchain company called R3, and they build this blockchain called Corda that's being used by the banks. That's the symbol for Corda. You didn't even know it existed, and yet they're out there trying to sell something, and we're the ones in the know. So how on earth is the guy in the board seat meant to know what they're buying? And then I tell you that there's all these other blockchains out there as well, and they've all got slightly different funky things about them. It's a tough business. It's a tough business to try to sell this technology. And then we look inside what a blockchain actually is, and we've heard the excellent technical explanation of actually this technology isn't so new, it's just been combined in different ways. So we're pretty sure we understand the networking layer. We're pretty sure we understand the databasing layer, although there are new databasing things coming along all the time. Consensus protocols are where it starts to get very interesting. And then on top of that, we've got virtual machines running distributed applications that rely on the data within the shared ledger. So a consensus protocol. And again, these go way back. You can have Byzantine fault-tolerant consensus. You can have non-fault-tolerant consensus. Blockchain is merely one flavor of consensus. Well, that's how I use the word. It's not really a hard definition. To me, blockchain implies Nakamoto-style probabilistic finality rather than true finality, like you would find in one of these others. So that's the inside of a blockchain. And you're trying to explain this to a CEO, by the way. You're trying to tell them why they should choose this one rather than another one. It's not easy. So then you've got the way that blockchains interact with the outside world, or what blockchains actually do. So you have your consensus protocol, and then you have your digitized objects. So is that a digitized avocado? Is that a virtualized pound? Well, actually, pounds are all virtual anyway. So is that a pound? Or is that a timestamp saying when this oil was sucked out the ground? So that's your digitized object. You then have rules or smart contracts about how those are exchanged or accessed or made available to others. You can then ascribe value to those and have some sort of payment system built in, all sitting on top of that. But that has to interact with national law, has to be legally compliant. And you have to know who is doing what. Because the key thing about blockchains is they do not track veracity, they track liability. They don't give a damn about what you say in them, they only care who said it. Right. So, you've got a blockchain business, you think you're going to make it to market, you've got a great idea for fixing the avocado supply chain, but you go out and you start talking to people and you realize actually only a few people out there, well, a few years ago it was only a few, now more people have heard of it. But in terms of companies experimenting with it, I think Deloitte's survey recently found something like 60% of companies had started experimenting, so that's pretty good. Moved on quite a lot. I still think we're here. because you've got to get these guys all aligned at the same time to start using your product. So the people leading the field can often feel like there's a massive chasm in front of them before they'll see any real progress out there. And it can be disappointing, but I think we can all try to help that. Business models in blockchain are another issue. What is it that someone is selling? Well, they're selling a blockchain. Is that really what you're selling? Are you selling trust? Are you selling item provenance? Are you selling a better identity product? Who's actually going to pay you for this? How much should they pay you for it? Because ultimately, that's what businesses are about. You don't have a business if you're not making any money. Why are you selling it? Who wants to buy it? And why should they buy it? Because it will save them money is the usual mantra for blockchain. It's going to be more efficient. It's going to be better. You're going to know more. But no one has quantified those amounts yet. It's difficult. Value propositions, you'll have heard these everywhere. It's going to save us billions of pounds. It's going to make us billions of pounds. But it ends up looking a bit like this, because we don't see the stories publicly. We need to see stories like this in the public with real evidence behind it. I'm sure they'll come, but we're just not there yet. So the Dutch Field Lab concept is something that we really liked. And so we've tried to replicate it here in the UK. Collaboration from the outset, tapping into local talent, bringing in diverse stakeholders, to go through a simple process where you start with identifying something that is solvable using a distributed system or a shared ledger. So I'll run you through an example that we've had. So these were field labs. So we have three field labs up and running. One recently signed with Sellafield and the Nuclear Decommissioning Authority. One with the construction sector and one in oil and gas. And there's cheeky little Phil Hammond on the right, because he mentioned it in the national budget last year. Anyway, so in construction, we managed to get all these companies in one room together. And we started talking about blockchain. They'd all heard of it. They were all interested in it. But we tried to help them, so we also invited a load of blockchain companies, local small UK blockchain companies. And we worked through discussing with them what the technology can actually do. So there's a piece of education up front. Then there's a piece about problem finding. So what problems were they facing in their industry that was not just within one company, but common between multiple companies, where in fact better shared data might improve things. So the area that we settled on, so I'll tell you things that we discounted. So we discounted financial elements. They all wanted to get paid faster and cheaper. They all wanted money to be faster and money to be cheaper, because naturally, blockchain came to the fore in the financial services, so they think it's a financial technology. But unfortunately, the regulatory space isn't quite clear about what we're allowed to do there yet, so we decided to park that stuff. They then moved on to thinking about supply chain provenance, so that a steel beam from a factory could be tracked all the way through into a building, then tracked for its life of 70 years plus. Unfortunately, the amount of infrastructure that you would have to build, the number of stakeholders you would have to align to create that solution was unfeasible at the time. So then we settled on weather-based compensation events. So this is the idea that if there's an adverse weather event on a work site, you have multiple parties on that work site who need to be informed simultaneously, and you need to be able to make adjustments to the compensation claims of each according to pre-written contracts. So this is something we've recently submitted to Innovate UK, along with a couple of the partners who attended. So the idea is that we take a standard NEC3 contract clause, we digitize it, we put it into a shared ledger between all parties on an active work site, and we compare the process against existing paper so that we can have a real head-to-head scientific experiment to say, does a distributed shared system give you better outcomes than paper-based legal process? So this is what we're trying to do. We're trying to take a digital weather stream, put it through a smart contract, operating on a ledger to which everyone is party, so that everyone has instant awareness of their entitlements, their rights and responsibilities under the compensation clause in that contract. So I will finish up there. and take any questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Rob. Do we have any questions from the audience?
Wow, good.
Okay. All right. Oh, one at the back. Yep, from Tom.
A tricky one. So it's a good point. Ultimately, in the future, you would want some system relying on in-field Internet of Things devices verified by an authority to say that they're operating correctly. In this first instance, we're trying to walk before we can run, so we're just trying to tap into a digitized version of the Met Office, which all parties already agree on. It's just the triggering and the inaction of the contract clauses that they don't necessarily agree on. So we're trying to preset those. The lawyers in the room from these companies are actually very interested in this because they think it can offset a lot of the back office that they have to take care of now. Interesting. So how big is the EV market? How big is the second-hand battery EV market? How much fraud is out there? I would say it's a minor concern to address today, I'm afraid. So if you're convincing me as an investor to invest a couple of million to build a shared ledger solution, align multiple stakeholders to get uptake today, on a problem that doesn't yet exist, I'm afraid it's not going to fly.
Nigel invest.
Okay. And Nick?
We saw that the UK was not on France's list.
Yeah. No, I think it's right. Leave it out. Leave it out. We need to do better. I hope Digital Catapult's the missing ingredient, Nick. You know, we are trying to be a neutral convening space for these technologies to give people a way to explore them, figure out good early use cases so that they can deploy experiments, prove their value in the market, and then actually hopefully just kickstart the economic engine so that people out there just start doing business without someone like us in the room. It's not there yet. What I think we need is someone at fairly senior level in the UK to just give a little bit of tacit support. Say, do what the Dutch did. We as the UK support the exploration of these technologies. We encourage you to go and talk to these few people to do it. I think that would be all it needs for people to feel confident that they can start experimenting.
In your presentation, you briefly mentioned about GDPR and also company data. Personally, I feel that, you know, it's not like one and the other. The DLT can be part of the comprehensive system. So in your experience, do you come across how they actually integrate company data, GDPR sensitive information?
So I only know of a couple of companies out there playing with this stuff. The lawyers are always very concerned about GDPR. The best answer right now is just keep it separate. Keep any personally identifiable information separate. Yeah, so the stuff that we're doing in journalism, so remember, GDPR is not an issue if it's a contractual obligation to have an identity. So that's some of the things around there. If you need to identify the party as a result of the actual legal agreement, you know, so a aircraft engineer who signs off a machine part is not allowed to hide who they are. That is part of their requirement, is that they are identified as a person when they sign something off. Same as a doctor signing off a prescription and the like. So, you know, those are bits where I know that I will have there is a gentleman in this room who you should definitely talk to about GDPR if you are concerned about identity issues.
Cool.
But I'm not allowed to identify them. Yeah.
Okay, so I think that then takes us to time for this first session. It looks like we have a brief announcement from Jane.
Oh, just briefly, I should have said that.
No, thank you.
Thank you, Jane. Okay, so let's take this opportunity to thank Rob and indeed all of our speakers this morning again.